Tea Party. John Boehner had the right wing of the right wing, and then against them, and they became the Freedom Caucus, which was even a bigger burr in the side of Paul Ryan.
I think we should go back for earlier.
Go back to 1994.
Yeah, now you're talking.
This is gold.
Okay.
Let's do some of this.
I want to say, like, when was the last time we had an ambitious rising star congressman from Louisiana who was on the verge of being Speaker of the House?
Bob
Livingston. Bob Livingston, call your office.
Mr. Speaker.
You're at the intersection of business and politics. This is the 14th and G podcast from Melman Consulting. Now, here's our host, Dean Hinkson.
Mr. Speaker. Those words were not super relevant when I cut the intro to this podcast, but they were relevant last week and they're super relevant again this week. Listeners of 14th and G, and I know many of you do, who listen through the end credits, will hear the words, "Beam me up, Mr. Speaker." And those were spoken by the late Congressman Jim Traficant. And it seems like now we've got a house full of Jim Traficant's characters who just want to parade themselves in front of the cameras and get attention to what end I do not know. So much to break down. We're going to get right to it. I'm joined once again here in the 14th and G Worldwide studios by Republican Bruce Melman and Democrat David Thomas. Gentlemen, welcome to 14th and G. We're going to cover, because our good friend David Thomas is back from a brief illness. He looks fit as a fiddle.
Fantastic.
Fantastic. We're going to cover all of 2023 in 23 minutes. Bruce, DT, welcome to 14th and G.
Thank you, Dean.
Well, thank you for having me back here. And let me just say how nice it was to hear both of your voices here last week when I was holed up in my attic guest room with COVID again. Very 2021 of me, but thankfully I've got it out of my system. And I will say, you guys left me with a lot of things that I wanted to say. So I'm not saying we go over the 23 minutes here, but I'm going to require a few more minutes on my side.
Well, DT, that is only fair. Let's open it up. The country is 247 years old, I know, because I was born in 1976, and all I have to do is add 200. And in all of that time, the House of Representatives has never had the speaker's chair vacated, certainly not for this long. I believe there has been a death or two of a serving speaker. But as we all know by now, Speaker Kevin McCarthy was ousted by 208 Democrats and 8 Republicans. The Republicans have still not found their way out of the wilderness. So, Mr. Thomas, the floor is yours. How did we get here? Why are we here, and why can't we get out of this?
You know, I lock myself
in. And I say we. Yeah. 208 Democrats.
Oh, my goodness. Where to start here? Look, I think this is something, while very sudden, that has happened in the last week that has been brewing within the House Republican Conference for probably the last 20 years, if not farther. We were discussing earlier. Certainly, you can trace this back to the beginning of the Tea Party, but I think you can go back farther than that. As Bruce will frequently point out, the Republicans, we think of them as generally having this corporate structure and everybody reports up, but they're always taking shots at each other. You can go back to Teddy Roosevelt and William Howard Taft, for crying out loud.
Speaker Joe Cannon, radical revolutionaries are in the GOP DNA.
That's right. And so it just seems that things are picking up at a more rapid pace than we're used to here. And, you know, the seeds that were planted, I would say, by Kevin McCarthy and Eric Cantor and Paul Ryan over a decade ago, they are now reaping what they sow.
He's maligning the young gun.
Oh, my gosh. Well, the young guns are slim pickings these days. I'm going to go back even farther. I mean, there are many reasons why this is happening to Republicans and not to Democrats. And let's just say Steve Scalise got 113 votes in conference. That would normally be the nominee that Republicans vote for on the floor as the majority party in the House. But go back to 1994. The Republican Revolution. And what were one of the tenets of the Gingrich speakership and the contract with America on which they ran and won in 1994? Overturned the House majority for the first time in 52 years. They democratized the caucus. They castrated committee chairmen. And they even castrated the leadership. And you throw on top of that things like McCain-Feingold that took soft money away from the parties. Add on top of that social media, where so many members now have their own independent fundraising profiles. You know, they get these hits there in the Cannon Rotunda or the Russell Rotunda, and they're raising they're raising hundreds of thousands of dollars off of it. Unlike the Democrats, you know, so many, DT, we've talked, so many people who, the minute they stuck their head up out of line with Nancy Pelosi, they weren't just questioning their chairmanship. They found themselves out of Congress.
If you want to go back that far, I'll take it even more macro. At the end of the day, this is the internet revolution disrupting politics. Because the politics that, when we were paying attention, certainly historically, were very party dominated. You needed the party to get out your message. You needed the party to raise the money. If the party wasn't behind you, you wouldn't have the infrastructure, the support to get your name on the ballot and to move forward. And so for a very long time, we saw a lot more respect for the party. The internet allows you to disintermediate the party. We see this with institutions all over the place. Individuals are empowered, that's good. Institutions are weakened, that's often bad. Nowhere is that true more than politics. And on the Republican side, that's given opportunity for these performative individuals to run against their own party, because they can raise money nationally. They don't need to worry about the district. The money from political action committees, people used to all talk about business PACs, they were a moderating influence. Now all the money comes from Act Blue and Win Red or from super PACs. There's no reason to be a team player. There's no reason to be constructive for the institution. Be a sole operator, be a lone wolf. You can raise your money, you can build a national profile, you can get your message out. That's the world that I don't think the institutions around politics have figured out.
The institution has absolutely not figured it out. I pulled a quote here because I think we have blown by one of the foundational norms of the operation of the Congress without a lot of consideration. The quote, Steve Scalise got 113 votes. That is a majority. But how are you going to convince the other 100-something of us that just say, well, now we're going to vote for Steve Scalise? That's Troy Nels, Republican congressman, represents the 22nd District of Texas. He's a rank-and-file member. Why? Because for decades, if not centuries, when you won the internal caucus nomination, you go to the floor and you lock arms and you vote for your party's candidate for speaker. And now this is much more like a British parliamentary-style coalition forming, where a prime minister has to go out and try to cobble a governing coalition together. Of course, this is not a parliament. This is one half of a bicameral Congress, and that's the problem.
So what you're telling me, Dean, is that you're shocked that Troy Nels and other Republicans are not willing to accept the outcome of an election. That's very on brand for Republicans these days, number one. Number two is, you should have continued the quote there. What is Congressman Nels called on? He is called that the caucus should invite former President Trump to the conference and nominate him to be their speaker, which would really be the icing on the cake of the shit sandwich that the Republicans have developed over the past month.
Although, look, I'd say Trump exploited the same phenomenon that others like Matt Gaetz are exploiting now. Trump didn't invent it, and he wasn't a constructive force. He accelerated. But ultimately, Trump ran against the institutional Republican Party. That's how he got the nomination. He has continued to run against the institutional Republican Party. He spends as much energy going after Mitch McConnell as he does after anyone else. Dean, to the quote you read, though, what it feels like is we went from the way the House operated to the subsequent Hastert rule, where a speaker was expected to only bring things that had a majority of the majority. We may have now jumped to the Roy rule, where you can't bring anything unless you have at least 218 of your own members willing to vote for it. In the case of Kevin McCarthy, he had 96% of the conference support to be speaker, and 96% was insufficient. The era of team play is over.
It's over, but I mean, the gasoline on that fire is the fact. Sure, okay. If you've got 260 members of the House in your party out of 435, maybe, but when you've only got 222 and you have to get 218 to get a majority, the Roy rule rubs a little thin.
Well, there is one person who has about 213 votes in support here, and that is Hakeem Jeffries. He's got about 100 more than Steve Scalise. He's got about 100 more than Jim Jordan. And
Matt Gaetz was counting on.
As I appreciate you point out at the start, why didn't the Democrats come save the Republicans again from themselves? Why didn't they save Kevin McCarthy? I can give you about 100 reasons why that didn't happen. But I will throw it back at you all. Why aren't there five Republicans, not moderates, but institutionalists, who could go across the aisle to Leader Jeffries to say, there are too many issues in this country right now that we need to be addressing here, and the Congress can't function. Why don't we form a coalition government?
We may approach that point. It's for a Republican member of Congress to empower a Democratic speaker. It seals their death warrant, but seals their political death warrant. I mean, they're certainly not going to win a primary or another election.
Well, they're already being primary. That's the thing, right? What we've seen is not only is the right wing of the right wing demanding fealty from all Republicans, or else they're going to go after them, but they're trying to take them out in primaries in districts, as we see 2022 election. You run the Herschel Walkers, you run the Doc Ozzes, you run candidates who can't win in moderate districts. You know what their subsequent members are called? Democrats.
Right. Well, the challenge here from Republicans is, yes, I can't imagine a coalition government form, so maybe we'll end up there in 2 weeks from now if Congress can't do anything. But the Republicans in the House are certainly making the case for they shouldn't be in charge of anything. They are not able to control the government at this point. They've done this to themselves here, and there are critical issues that should be addressed here. Boy, if we're looking at elections coming up in 13 months from now, that's a pretty powerful case for it. These guys, this is a clown show. You can't put these guys in charge. They are making the case to be a permanent minority party. They know how to throw bombs from the back. They don't know how to lead.
Well, of course, you make the point, DT. None of this is happening in a vacuum, and it's certainly not happening during a slow time on the world stage. Tragedy, horrible, disgusting acts of barbarism and terrorism occurred in Israel here in the past week with an attack from Hamas, who controls the Palestine area of the Gaza Strip. There's probably no single entity, certainly not on the foreign stage, on the world stage, there's probably no single entity that has broader or deeper support in the United States Congress than Israel. And, members of the House are now looking, when the Senate comes back, they are going to hit the ground running with a resolution of support. There will be discussions of a sort of an arsenal of democracy package, certainly of aid, military aid to Israel, and it probably includes Ukraine as well. Can the House withstand particularly on the Israel front, can they withstand the fact that the Senate's moving and they're unable to bring anything across the floor?
Well, I'll give you my prediction. If they haven't, if we haven't voted a speaker in, I believe that the acting speaker, Mr. McHenry, will move an Israel and only Israel, not Ukraine, not anything else, resolution under suspension of the rules requiring a two-thirds vote. There's a big debate, as you know, about how much authority does a temporary speaker like this have. It's historically unprecedented. So we don't know until we learn. And under suspension of the rules, you can do whatever you want because you are suspending the rules that say you can't do it. If two-thirds of the members want to go there, I could easily see, and I don't think Mr. McHenry wants to go too far, but I could easily see the package getting passed under suspension if we're in this period where, half the Republicans have guns pointed at the other half, figuratively.
I think you're right, though.
So far, figuratively.
Yeah, I think you're right, though. I think that Senator Schumer, who's just back from China, I think now had a big coattail over there, cut it short to come back. I think we'll see a very strong bipartisan, 90-plus votes in the Senate supporting Israel financially and otherwise. And that's going to put a lot of pressure on the House to have to do something here. Now, I think McHenry rightly realizes his authority is very limited to what he can able to do. As the rule has been written for the Speaker pro tem, this came out of the 9/11
continuity of government
20 plus years ago. It was to just convene the House to be able to elect a new speaker. That is what his authority is. Now, he's already exceeded that because in addition to that, apparently he can also be sort of a slumlord and kick elderly members of Congress out of their offices if he doesn't like them.
Nancy Pelosi's hideaway.
When they're at funerals, no less. I mean, I didn't realize that was part of the continuity of government, but that's there. So he's already shown the willingness to expand his powers here. In all seriousness, this is why government needs to function. It is a dangerous world out there. There are things that are going to happen, and we have to have, our system is built for two-party government here. So I hope the House Republicans can pull themselves together.
Well, you're right, DT. And the piece that I think about here, when this is studied, one of the observations is that Prime Minister Netanyahu may have taken his eye off the intelligence ball, focused on controversial judicial reforms, focused on his own legal challenges within the country of Israel, and they're going to have to decide if that happened. But the idea that domestic social issues are getting in front of national security makes me think of more than 300 military promotions that are being held up by a single senator, with more than 90 senators ready to, as normally would be done pro forma, promote those the DOD thinks worthy. The Strategic Petroleum Reserve is at decades low because we wanted to bring prices down prior to the midterms. The CHIPS funding, which Congress agreed to on a bipartisan basis, is being held up by those who want to undo deals that were already cut on the funding side, and those who want to require social things like, unions created childcare centers on the spending side. God forbid we get to the point where we're looking back thinking, man, we took our eye off the ball focusing on a lot of these social issues instead of realizing that the defense and the intelligence establishments need to be free to do their jobs.
A poll just out in the Jerusalem Post, 4 out of 5 Jewish Israelis blame Netanyahu and the current government for allowing the terrorist attack from Hamas. So that certainly appears to be sinking in. Gee whiz, if we needed reminding in the 20 plus years since 9/11 that we do live in a dangerous world, that we live in a much more connected world, we often, particularly in our jobs, we represent a lot of folks in the technology sector. We represent a lot of folks that are doing amazing things. But boy, so far, the 21st century seems a lot like the 20th century with internet and drones.
Well, look, I mean, sorta. First, I think a mistake a lot of policymakers make and a lot of businesses make is to believe that the world of the post-Cold War was a new permanent normal, the end of history, as Francis Fukuyama famously called it and wrote. And I think one of the things we're going to realize 10, 20, 30 years from now is the period from the end of the Cold War to the start of the Ukraine War, that was the aberration. Right. That the world is a dangerous place, that the unipolar American moment was amazing, but, where it was hyper-globalization, where it was all about, technology and creativity and a lot of movement across borders, we are going back to what is probably more of a natural state of the world.
For all the fantastic and amazing things that technology brings us and enables us to do, it does not change the fundamentals of human nature. All right, David, I gave you the first word. I'm going to give you the last word. You got any predictions on what's going to happen here in the People's House?
I have no prediction on what's going to happen in the People's House. I fear to look at my phone since we've been talking for the past 23 minutes to find out that perhaps there already is a new Speaker of the House who has since been deposed. So that may have happened. So if this is out of date when you listen to this, sorry about that. So I will take it from the rough and tumble world of the House to the gridiron. I've got our prediction this weekend. I will be in a state near and dear to your heart, Indiana, this weekend to see the Fighting Irish take on the USC Trojans. Now, the Irish have hit a couple of speed bumps lately, but I think they're getting back on track and hoping for a big win. Who does Ole Miss play this weekend? I'll throw that back at you.
You know what? I don't know who Ole Miss has, I'm ashamed to say, but the Carolina Tar Heels, ranked, I think, 14th currently, have got the Miami Hurricanes, who are also ranked, I think, 24th. The Tar Heels are 5-0 under Mac Brown. This is one of the best starts we've had in school history for football, and I'm hoping for big things out of the Heels this weekend.
Well, let's say, regardless of what may or may not happen up in the House of Representatives here, we can all agree that it's been a pretty good football season so far, and we got two more months to go.
It's been a fantastic football season. Bruce Melman, David Thomas, thank you so much for joining me on 14th and G.
Thank you, Dean.
Thanks, Dean.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast, brought to you by the lobbying firm of Melman Consulting. For more, just type 14th and G podcast into your favorite search engine or look for 14th and G wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe.
Beam me up, Mr. Speaker.